No, actually, this is just a small piece of what I did at Purdue. So what we were basically looking at is trying to see if we can manipulate the overall quality of greenhouse-grown tomatoes using LED lights. So before I kick off, I just want to talk about what I study. So I'm a photobiologist, so I study how plants perceive and respond to different wavelengths of light. And they do this through a set of proteins called photoreceptors. And I have a small figure here that just kind of illustrates the about dozen or so photoreceptors that are known in plants and some of the different wavelengths of light that turn them on or turn them off. And ultimately, these photoreceptors drive changes in gene expression in plants that result in changes in plant growth and development. So one really classic example is an applied example of photobiology is using light to trick plants into flowering. This is something that floriculturists do all the time to get their crops ready for the market. And this is regulated by a protein known as phytochrome, which can also interact with some of the other photoreceptor proteins like cryptochrome. But what's less known is that light can also change the way plants produce secondary metabolites. And some of these metabolites are carotenoids, polyphenols, and glucosinolates. And all of these have been shown to have different health properties in humans. But the other thing, too, is that light can also change the way that plants produce volatile compounds, which contribute to the flavor and aroma of horticultural crops. And what's really interesting is that some of these compounds are derived from some of those nutritionally relevant compounds that I mentioned before. So, for instance, there are compounds that give us the impression of a sweet or floral smell that are breakdown products of carotenoids. So our lab works particularly with tomatoes, and the reason is it's a really valuable crop. It's the second most produced crop in the world, and in 2014, its value was approaching $60 billion. It's also filled with all sorts of good stuff like vitamin C, folate, carotenoids, and polyphenols, which have all been shown to positively influence our health. And then because there's this demand for tomatoes year-round, a lot of them are produced in greenhouses, about 40%. But during the off-season, there's really, especially in northern climates, there's not enough solar light to go around, so we have to use supplemental light. But of course, that draws a lot of energy. It's, I think, one of the second most indirect costs of production for tomatoes. So a lot of people are looking into using LEDs to cut down on the energy consumption and the overall cost of production. But additionally, greenhouse tomatoes have kind of a poor reputation, especially during the winter time. People just seem to not be impressed with greenhouse tomatoes compared to what they get out of their garden. So knowing that light can influence the way that plants produce nutritional compounds and flavor compounds, we figured maybe we could kill two birds with one stone here. We could use light, we could use LEDs to efficiently supplement our plants with light, but at the same time we might be able to influence their taste or their nutritional properties. So what we did is kind of just a broad battery of physicochemical testing, basic stuff like mass and color. We also looked at the sugar, pH, and titratable acidity, sugar to acid ratio, that kind of stuff. We also quantified water-soluble antioxidants like vitamin C, total phenolics, and some specific flavanols that are produced in the fruits. And of course, we quantified lycopene and beta-carotene, which are the primary carotenoids that give tomatoes their red color. To do this for colorimetry, we just use a handheld colorimeter. For our sugar concentration, handheld refractometer. pH and titratable acidity, very simple titration method. And same thing with for vitamin C. Total phenolics, we use the Follin-Chocolteau method. And then for flavanols, we use HPLC to separate the flavanols in our samples and then mass spec to quantify them. And then we use the UV-Vis spectrophotometer to quantify lycopene and beta-carotene. But in addition to all these physicochemical metrics, we also hosted kind of informal consumer sensory panels to see if any of our light treatments would have an effect on the way people perceive flavor and aroma of our tomatoes. And we asked people to rate the color, aroma, sweetness, acidity, aftertaste, texture, and overall approval of our fruits using both a hedonic scale, which is how much they like it, and an objective scale, which is, or an absolute scale, which is how strong the attribute is. And while this wasn't the major objective of the study, we did find a positive association between participant attendance and how much I was humiliated. So our hypotheses for our experiments were basically that blue light would increase ascorbic acid, phenolics, flavanols, and carotenoids. And this is based on literature using leafy greens in sole source settings. We also had the opportunity to play with red-far-red ratios, and we thought that supplemental far-red light would actually decrease carotenoids in our tomatoes. And we figured that if we did end up changing some of these nutritionally relevant compounds, that the flavor would be impacted as well. So to do this, we did a completely randomized design and used a variety known as Merlisse, which is a very common greenhouse variety. We had a few different light treatments. We had treatment A was 80% red, 20% far red. Treatment B was 10% blue, 90% red. Our control was just receiving ambient sunlight. Treatment D was 25% blue, 60% red, 15% far red, and E was 30% blue and 70% red. And we used a supplemental light intensity, 180 micromoles per meter squared per second, and a daily fluence of 1.04 times 10 to the 7th micromoles per meter squared. At typical production temperatures, 25 day, 15 night. So this is just an overview of our greenhouse, and if you look really closely, you can kind of see the different color spectra that are coming out of these LEDs. This is the beginning of the experiment, so we just have the bottom panel on. But once the plants were mature, we could turn all three panels on per tower. So some of the results, we did find some differences in mass, but they might not be important to a grower because overall the yield was the same for all of our treatments. Colorimetry, some differences, but not noticeable to the human eye. No differences in sugar, titratable acidity, pH, or the sugar to acid ratio. No differences in antioxidant compounds, and no differences in sensory attributes. So like I mentioned, we did have some small differences in mass. The only treatments that were really significant were treatment A, which was, I believe, 80% red, 20% far red, and our control. The rest of them were similar to each other. And for colorimetry, minor differences among some of the color attributes. One of the important ones, which is this A value here, which is the redness, that was the same across the board. So these tomatoes basically look the same. Sugar concentration, pretty much flat across the board. Lycopene concentration, some minor fluctuations, but again, nothing significant for our lighting treatments. And some of our sensory data, we had, for this experiment, we had 54 panelists come in, and there were some fluctuations in some of the attributes, but nothing stood out. Everything was within the confidence interval for each one, so we didn't notice any differences in taste in this experiment. So again, just to kind of wrap up this experiment, there were very few physico-chemical differences among our different lighting treatments. And our sensory studies revealed that we didn't have any significant differences among our different light treatments. So one thing that we think happened in this experiment, because again, these conclusions were a little bit surprising to us, because there's kind of a mountain of literature that says you can do all this with light, but most of it's in sole source settings, not in greenhouses where you have sunlight as well. So we're thinking that when the fruits were developing, there was actually enough sunlight to kind of saturate some of these responses that we were seeing. So while our supplemental lights were working and doing what they were supposed to do, the fact that we had so much sunlight might have kind of washed out that effect. One other fact is that within that sunlight that comes into the greenhouse, at least a third of it is green light. And this is true all year round. And green light has been shown to interact with the way that plants perceive red and blue light. So we're thinking that large component of green light that's coming into the greenhouse might have been kind of nullifying the way that our tomatoes were perceiving our red and blue light treatments, for that matter, the far red as well. So what I have here is a picture of the chromophore that's attached to one of the photosensors called cryptochrome. And what this does is basically a prosthetic group that under certain qualities of light, it changes its redox state and changes the way that the protein behaves. So these two forms on the left absorb blue light, so that's what activates the protein. These don't absorb light, but there's another one here that absorbs green light. So again, when you have green light present, you're changing that balance of the redox state of the chromophore, and you're changing the way the protein behaves. So that kind of wraps things up. There's a lot of people to acknowledge for this project. A lot of them were at Purdue and a lot of them were at other universities. But overall, this experiment couldn't have been done without a lot of help. So thanks. All right, we've got a few minutes for questions. Yeah.
Why just red and blue and far red? Why not orange? Why not green? Why not yellow? Why not any of these other discrete wavelengths in between the visible spectrum?
Okay, so the question was, why do we use red, blue, and far red instead of some of the other wavelengths that are between? So the primary objective of these studies was to enhance the growth and development of these plants. So first and foremost, the objective was yield and energy savings. So we were looking at red and blue light originally, just because based on the McCree curve, those are some of the more efficient wavelengths of light. The other reason too is that when we custom made those towers that we had are custom made, they just had those three colors available to us. We could have added those other colors in, but again, since we're looking at energy savings, we're really just looking for those most efficient wavelengths to drive photosynthesis. Yeah. Do we observe any differences in plant growth? I don't think so. Selena is not here. She was my colleague that was primarily doing the physiology work on that. Carrie, do you know?
There were some differences in node number and so on, and length of the vine after a 6-month experiment, but that was between the supplemental and the control.
Okay, so we did have some minor differences between supplemental treatments and controls in terms of node number and vine length, but other than that, not too much. Yeah, Bruce.
Have you calculated the fraction of your supplemental light total? Do you know what the total was? This would be profound if it was like a 30% increase and there was still nothing.
Right, so the
5% increase, well, then you really consider.
Right, so the question was if we calculated our, like the percent contribution of our supplemental light to solar light, correct? Yes, so one thing that's tricky about that is this experiment went from, I think, the middle of January to the beginning of May. So the light environment is super dynamic throughout the experiment. At least during the period that I was harvesting my fruits, I think it was in April, I don't think I have that data available, but I think we might be able to calculate that because we did have quantum sensors both within the canopy and in the rafters taking logging data for us on incoming light.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But that would help other people extrapolate from this. Say, if you knew the fraction
right.
I think, as you well know, your hypotheses are good, and you kind of got a very different result with sole source light.
Yeah, I would think so. And I mean, the basic scientist in me would want nothing more than to put a huge tarp over that greenhouse and repeat the experiment in more of a sole source setting. But since we are operating under the guise of trying to help the industry and trying to figure out ways to make tomato production more efficient, we're kind of stuck within the limitations of just typical greenhouse production. Yeah.
What's the average?
I'm not sure what the average intensity is, but what was generally, in terms of a total daily dose, what they normally shoot for is 25 moles per meter squared per day of light. So tomatoes require quite a bit of light compared to some other crops. Yeah, Joy.
How does the flavor of these compare with, the grocery store variety?
Okay, so our question was, how did they compare to a grocery store variety? We didn't do that test only because we had no idea what variety we could get at the store, but that is something I've been curious about. In some other experiments that we did, you can kind of see a picture here in this slide. We also had a field plot. So this experiment, we didn't have that variety grown outside, but for some of our other ones, we were comparing indoor versus outdoor, and the only things we would pick up usually would be maybe some differences in aroma. But overall, the difference between indoor and outdoor wasn't as profound as we thought it was going to be.